Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and coming up on Wednesday, it is Pi Day. We're talking about that mathematically constant number, Pi Day. And joining me now to talk a little bit about Pi Day and poetry is Dan May. He's an assistant professor of mathematics at Black Hills State University. Daniel May, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kara. It's great to be here.
So Pi Day plus poetry equals fun. It's part of a lecture that you're going to give next Wednesday night at the Sanford Homestake Visitor Center. But let's talk a little bit about how you as a math professor celebrate Pi Day.
Yeah, Kara. Well, my plan is to be up at the Sanford Visitor Center and, we'll talk about a variety of intersections between mathematics and poetry. This intersection goes back, really like thousands of years. This, maybe seems like a surprising connection, but poets and mathematicians have been exploring this intersection for a long time. And I suppose along the way, we might encounter a few poems and activities that involve pi.
So is it about the food pie or math pie?
I think they're going to have pizza and fruit pies up there for folks to eat. So, maybe a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. So let's talk math and poetry.
Yes, let's.
Do you have any poems to share?
I do. I actually have several. I want to start out with a poem from Emily Dickinson. So, famous 19th century American poet. And it goes like this. We shall find the cube of the rainbow, of that there is no doubt, but the arc of a lover's conjecture eludes the finding out. So this is a short poem, but actually it's kind of indicative of the mathematics that appears throughout Emily Dickinson's work, where she uses mathematical language, cube, arc, conjecture in here, to maybe make sort of a deeper point about, something in the human condition. And this is just one example of a long overlap in these areas.
A lot of geometry imaging.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
And how as you interpret that poem, do you need to understand math to really be able to interpret some of these poems?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I think that, like any other kind of reference or allusion in poetry or any work of art, if you understand what is being alluded to, your appreciation for the poem, perhaps maybe deeper, but that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it if you don't know some of the allusions. I suppose I might say that I believe that mathematical poetry comes in sort of three different varieties. So there are poems which are explicitly about mathematics. So, there's a long history of this. The Greek mathematician Archimedes wrote a very long poem, which was essentially just a very, very long algebra problem written in verse over 2,000 years ago. There's a second category of mathematical poetry, which Emily Dickinson's work perhaps falls into, in which mathematical language is being used in a metaphorical sense. So the poet is using themes, images, language from mathematics to say something not necessarily explicitly mathematical. And then the third category of mathematical poetry that I am interested in is poetry where the structure of the poem is somehow dictated by math, but the content might not be explicitly mathematical at all.
Oh, do you have an example of one of those?
Well, I do. So those are a little bit maybe hard to hear because the mathematical structure is something that maybe jumps out at you on the page. So I think what I'll do is I'll read a poem here that actually perhaps falls into the first and third category. So on the face of it, this poem is about an incident in math history, but as I'll hopefully explain afterwards, there's also some mathematical structure hiding in here. So this poem is called The Square Root of Two, and this is written by Sarah Glass, who is a mathematician and poet living in Connecticut. Square root of two. We started our voyage on the Gulf of Tarentum. The sea was choppy and the brothers were restless. At dawn, we gathered on the deck, intent to solve the conflict like rational men. Hippasus still refused to keep the secret. He had discovered that the diagonal of a square is incommensurable with its side. Alas, our world had collapsed, and so did our geometric proofs. Too much to lose, we heaved him overboard. So this poem, explicitly on its face, is about the discovery by Greek mathematicians that the square root of 2 is an irrational number. That is to say, it cannot be expressed as a fraction. And this knowledge came, you know, as a surprising piece of information, and it actually maybe altered the foundations of mathematics. And so, in some sense, this poem is explicitly about mathematics. However, you might also notice, if you were looking at this on the page, that the number of lines in each stanza of this poem corresponds to the digit in the decimal expansion of the square root of 2.
Oh.
So, for example, the second digit in the square root of 2 is a 4, and the second stanza of this poem has 4 lines in it. So, you know, there's some interesting structure to this poem as well.
Not something everybody would pick up on, probably.
Not by hearing it, but by seeing it, you might. And so, at my talk next Thursday at the Sanford Center, we'll definitely have a lot of visual aids. I have slides, I have handouts, some activities to get folks up and moving around to try to physically live in some of these poems.
And you're going to try and encourage people to compose their own mathematical poetry?
Yeah, that's right, Kara. My plan is to demonstrate a few different relatively straightforward forms of mathematically structured poetry. So most folks will have heard of, perhaps, of a haiku. And so, you know, you might know a haiku is a short poetic form in which the syllable count of each line is dictated by this short integer sequence 5, 7, 5. And so we might play around with that, but there are other integer sequences that can also give rise to interesting poetic form. So that would be one activity we'll be playing around with next Thursday.
And does the rhythm and the meter of a poem have anything to do with mathematics as well?
I think it certainly can. Most folks some folks may be aware of the rules governing, say, a sonnet. There's sort of some rhythmic rules that dictate that form of poetry. So yeah, I think that happens too.
What's the message that you want people to take away from your talk?
Well, I suppose connection is the point of my talk. So the realms of mathematics and poetry, I suppose, may seem like very distinct and like they have nothing to do with each other, but I believe that at a deeper level, they actually do share some pretty meaningful similarities. You know, they are both can be fairly abstract pursuits. They are both interested in using language and symbols precisely, you know, in a way to evoke some sort of response in the reader or the listener. You know, poetry is generally, I suppose, intended to evoke some sort of emotional response. Mathematics is intended to provoke some sort of intellectual response. But at the end of the process, both the poet and the mathematician, I suppose, are constructing something that is meant to move their audience.
And do you have another poem you'd like to share?
I do. I really do, yeah. So, Kara, have you ever heard of Zeno's Paradox?
Zeno's Paradox.
Yeah.
I have not.
Okay, let me describe Zeno's Paradox a little bit as an introduction to this poem. So, Zeno was another Greek mathematician, and Zeno, one of his paradoxes goes something like this. And the idea is that, well, apparently motion itself is impossible. Because in order for a person to walk across a room, well, first she would have to go halfway across the room, and then she would have to go half of the remaining distance, and then she would have to go half of the remaining distance again, and et cetera. And apparently she would never reach the far wall of the room. And, you know, this sort of puzzled folks for a long time, and it really took centuries and until the advent of calculus before we had a mathematical answer to this. But all of this is just a prelude to a poem by Alice Major, a Canadian poet who used to be the poet laureate of Edmonton. And so this is Zeno's Paradox by Alice Major. We've solved the paradox. Motion is possible. The arrow's flight ends, even if its fractions interlock to infinity. Half a distance, yet again half and half. We know this series sums to a finite thunk and shudder. And we know the thrumming calculus of life comes to completion. I am halfway through my count of years, halfway to knowing all I will know, yet something stalls in the air, an infinitely subtle slowing. Of whatever I have learned, when the arrow falls silent, one last sliver will be lost. A final distance will remain uncrossed. Yeah, and so this is indicative of a lot of Alice Major's work. You know, this comes from her book Standard Candles, which was published a few years ago. She has a lot of poems that use mathematical imagery in this way. I find this poem particularly moving.
And have you, as a math professor, and we only have about a minute left here, you as a math professor, have you always been connected to the written word, the poetry side of things as well?
Yes, I think so. I would say that when I first got seriously involved with mathematics, right at the beginning of my undergraduate math career, that's what I wanted to do, was math and poetry, and it's nice to finally be able to find willing collaborators to help me out with this.
All right, Daniel May, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kara. It's been great to be here.
Daniel May joins us from the Sue W. White Studio at Black Hills State University, and he is speaking on Thursday, March 14th, beginning at 5 o'clock at the Sanford Lab Homestake Visitor Center.